Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello and welcome to episode 151 of We Are Going Up. I'm Mark Crossley, and this is the voice of a man who's been on a stag do in Newcastle for the last few days.
Sounds all right.
I'm slowly starting to feel like a human being again today, actually.
You're looking well.
I certainly wasn't feeling well yesterday. But here's a man who will be experiencing that very feeling quite a lot in the next few weeks. Yeah. I think David Cameron-Walker is here.
Hello.
The Championship is having an international break, and so are you.
That's a good way of putting it. Indeed, I am.
Now,
slightly longer, though, than the international break.
You're having a slightly longer break in the States. You tell everyone where you're going to be on Sunday. Okay, is that a thing? Are we allowed to say?
I'm going to WrestleMania.
You are going to WrestleMania.
In the Levi Stadium.
Is Stone Cold Steve Austin going to be there? The Rock? Angle?
They're not on anymore.
Okay, they're not on. I don't watch wrestling anymore. But
Stewart might be there.
Yes, I saw that. I did see that. But you'd rather be the Vic, surely, in the next few weeks.
Well, we have got some big games coming up. And it's funny because part of my trip, without being too self-indulgent and telling you all about my holidays,
it's our show, mate,
not as glamorous as it sounds. I'm going to Vegas for two nights during the holiday. The last time I was in Vegas was 2 years ago. Long-time listeners may recall me having the dilemma of trying to find a place to watch Watford's potentially promotion-winning game against Leeds 2 years ago on the last day of the season. Which went disastrously wrong. But I couldn't find a TV back then.
In both ways, I suppose.
It was on at 5 a.m, Vegas time, and I was getting text updates from my dad.
Okay.
Like, literally, minute by minute, live minute by minute text updates from
BBC
from my dad.
Website.
Yeah, it wasn't quite as good as them, though. and we were playing twice. The good thing is for me, we were playing twice over the Easter weekend, away to Derby, home to Middlesbrough, both on Sky.
Ooh, big games.
And both at reasonable times, I think. So I should hopefully be able to watch them. I'm going to try and convince as many American sports fans who were there.
Get some bits recorded.
A lot of the places in Vegas where you go to watch sports, there's like walls of just all of this, because it's like one of the only places you can gamble in America, basically. So you've got people just watching like everything, you know, baseball, NFL, basketball, all the sports.
Is it like the
Carlsberg
Sports Bar in Central London?
Yeah, and we're all trying to convince people to support the Hornets.
Okay, well, we'll see how you get on with that when you get back. Coming up later on this week's show, we are going to be asking if Hartlepool can pull off the great escape in League 2. Ever since we've been to see Peterborough, they are on the roll. They're in the playoffs spots.
Unbelievable stuff, isn't it?
We should get something for that. We'll also talk a bit more about what's been going on in the Championship promotion picture, and we'll assess that mental game between Rotherham and Sheffield Wednesday, or try to, with lots of goals right at the end. All the usual offers still available, by the way, on our website, wearegoingup.co.uk. Get your Paddy Power offer there. You get a free audiobook on us at audible.co.uk/goingup, and you can sign up for the football polls. Also, later, we're going to be joined by Jacob Daniel, the deputy editor of Notts County's Black and White fanzine. Jacob will be on to talk about the news that Notts County have sacked Sean Derry this week following a run of just 3 wins in their last 24 league games, a run which has left them teetering on the brink of relegation to League 2. But first, before that, we are going to begin at the National Stadium at Wembley on Sunday, where a crowd of over 72,000 watched Bristol City clinch the Johnston's Paint Trophy for a record. A third time following that 2-0 win against Walsall, goals from Aidan Flint and Mark Little. Seeing Steve Cottrell's side lift some silverware, and they'll be hoping to lift some more in the next couple of months, with a 10-point lead in League One going into the last 8 games of the season. So just why has everything gone so right at Ashton Gate this year? Let's find out more from a man we've had on the podcast before, a man who writes the Bristol City blog, The Exiled Robin. He is Paul Binning, and Paul was there at Wembley on Sunday, and I'm pleased to say he is on the line to speak to us right now. Paul, thanks very much for coming on the show. First of all, I guess I should get you to describe exactly what it was like to be there watching your side win a trophy in front of over 70,000 fans at Wembley.
Hi, Mark. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, pretty amazing. As you can imagine, I think, it's is the third time for us, which is a record of its level, and it's a record we sort of all thought about and played. Actually, we didn't really want that record because it just means we've been in the lower two divisions for too many years in the last 30. But to win a trophy at Wembley is pretty special. There's not many teams get a chance to do that, and to be followed by 40,000 people at the M4 to see it. And in the end, to be honest, it'd be nice and comfortable, actually, and quite a relaxable, enjoyable day out. It was one of those games we were in control of, and we sort of knew without too much arrogance. I think we were going to win quite early on.
Without taking anything away from Walsall, because it was a great achievement for them to get to Wembley for their first time in their
history,
but
yeah,
there was a sense of inevitability about the victory, really, from where I'm standing. You've had such an amazing season. You've got this huge league lead at the top of League One, and you know, you're comfortably the best team in those two divisions, as has been evidenced by you winning this competition, really, and you will go up this season, barring an absolute, you know, catastrophe and a miracle for someone to catch you. So, what an amazing season it's been! Like, the good times look like they're coming back.
Yeah, it has been. It's been beyond any dreams, and certainly in my sort of 30 or so years watching, the best season I think we've had. You know, I think Sunday really summed it up, to be honest. It wasn't overly exciting, partly because we're just, you know, again, without trying to sound too arrogant, I'm really careful not to be that, but we've been so good this season so often, and we just get in control of games, and once we take the lead, we control possession and we control the match, and we don't look under much threat. And I think the fact that two goals came from defenders on Sunday said a lot as well about the team ethic. We're not relying on sort of one or two people in the team as a great squad there. A small squad, it must be said. I think there's a lot of accusations that we've got a huge squad. I mean, we've got sort of 17 or 18 core who pretty much have played every game this season or been in the squad for every game. But it has just been absolutely tremendous. And I think Sunday was, again, testament to the fact how seriously we take every game. Steve Cottrell has come in and there's no messing. There's no taking some games easier. There's no easing off at any point. And he's taken every game in the JPT as seriously as any league game and given a few squad players a chance, but pretty much kept the core of the team there. And it's shown with results in the competition. You know, even on Sunday, I mean, he didn't sort of take people off after an hour when we were 2-0 up to save them for the league. He was playing, and he played them all for 80, 85 minutes, like he pretty much has done every game this season.
You mentioned Steve Cottrell there. Take us back to when he was appointed as Bristol City manager. What was the reaction amongst the fans, and has he exceeded all expectations?
Well, to answer the last one, absolutely. I've already been forced to eat my own humble pie, I must admit, and I am not ashamed to do that. You know, I was amongst a sizeable portion of a crowd who weren't overly impressed with the appointment. I think we saw the last few years of, you know, mixing and matching a few clubs here and there, and how some reports of direct football and, you know, quite attritional football at times, and we're a bit concerned about what we've done. But I mean, to be honest, he's pretty much hit every single hurdle face on, smacked them all down, is, you know, running well, cleared everything, because the football's fantastic. He's brought in creative players who are exciting and enjoyable to watch. As I said, he goes out and absolutely wants to win every single match he plays. And I know that sounds like an obvious thing to say for a manager, but it doesn't sort of come over everyone you see. And that attitude is clearly rubbed off on the players who are, you know, absolutely in it with him. But yeah, he's done fantastically. And, you know, hopefully I'm sure he already is planning for hopefully the championship next season, and has views on what's needed to help us to succeed at that level too.
You mentioned exciting attacking football, and I think that is largely because kind of the wealth of riches in terms of the playing squad at Cottrell's disposal, really. I mean, perhaps at other teams he's had in the past, when he hasn't necessarily had the most talented squad of players for the level he's been at, he may have had to sort of compromise and play more less attractive football, as it were. But if you look at some of the players you've got, Emmanuel Thomas, you know, we know all about him, how he, you know, spectacular he can be on his day. Luke Freeman's a very creative player. You know, Wilbraham scored 17 goals. Kieran Agarlo, you know, for League One, these are top players.
Absolutely, yeah. And when you look at what he did in the summer, I mean, I think, you know, this is a record I keep bleating on about this season, but I can't believe there are many clubs, many times, who have signed seven players in the summer and have found all seven pretty much in the first team all year without, you know, any loss of form, anyone being dropped. You know, they've all come in. It was clear he had decided the system he wanted to play, the style of football he wanted to play, and went out and found players to fit that system rather than just sort of accumulating a set of players. I mean, what he... also done has picked a system that's got the best out of the existing players. So if you look at Aidan Flint at the back, who signed the season before, he's now playing a sort of almost sweeper role in the back three. He's got two jobs, one to drop off and clear up the balls behind, and one to go and win every single ball in the air. And he's been absolutely tremendous for us. And then you've got Joe Bryan on the left, who was in and out of the side last year, absolutely made for a wing-back role. It's just absolutely perfect for him. And you know, Cottrell gives him that license to attack. And you know, he's rumoured to be attracting interest from the likes of Everton and other Premier League clubs. But yeah, all the way through the side, you know, Corey Smith and Luke Freeman, for me, are, you know, two of the best, if not the best, midfielders in the league. And they complement each other so perfectly, with Smith happy to hold and break up attacks, giving Freeman that license to sit in behind the strikers. And I think he's got about 15 assists this season already, which is, you know, quite a remarkable record.
Well, the numbers looking at the whole squad in sort of so many different aspects are remarkable. You mentioned Aidan Flint there. He scored 10 goals this season. You could have easily played him up front or in midfield. he is, yeah, a bit of a fan's favourite, isn't he?
He has been. And again, it's interesting. I think the last 2 months, we've had a lot of away games. We've had a long run of Saturday, Tuesday matches, 6-7 weeks in a row. And I think what we've really seen is Aidan Flint, as much as anyone, has really come to fore in that time. He's scored 6 goals in the last 10. To be honest, that's been coming. I think if you look at the 2 or 3 months before that, he was probably having a good chance from a set piece mainly every single game. And it was just either being saved or hitting the woodwork or sailing just over. And he's just obviously just narrowed his radar a little bit. But he's the first to put it down to the delivery he's getting from the likes of Freeman and Joe Bryan and Marlon Pack, who are just, you know, able to put the ball exactly where they want it from a set piece. And, you know, it's a great asset to have when you're maybe in a game where you're struggling to break through an open play.
I don't want to tempt fate, as it were. I suppose it is, you shouldn't necessarily talk about next season and the Championship before you've really got it done. But as we've said, you know, it looks all but there. You've had such a great season. And just so looking ahead, as you mentioned, the squad isn't that big, and I just had a look at the appearances. There's 9 players in your squad who've played over 40 games this season,
yeah,
obviously with the cup runs, some, 2 of which have played 50 already before the season's out. So there is clearly a dependence on a real core of players, as good as they may be for League One. You'd think there's going to be some reinforcements and some quality and some bodies and maybe some, you know, more Championship experience going to be added to this squad in the summer if and when you go up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, 2 points really on the squad. I think one is, if you look at the age of it, only Wade Elliott and Aaron Wilbraham are over, I think, 26. I think everyone else is 26 and under. So that certainly helps with playing 40, 50 matches in the season. There's enough energy there. We have got some experience. You know, we've got the likes of, I'd say, Elliott and Wilbraham. There's a few who have played at that level. But yeah, you've got to think that there'll be some players added over the summer. There's probably cover in almost every position needed. So, you know, what's that, 6-7 positions through the team that we need to add to, just to make sure we've got someone. I think the dilemma will be, you know, how good a player do you want to bring in? Do you want to replace someone who's done such a good job this year and bring in a bigger name and maybe affect the team spirit, which is absolutely evident with all the games they've played together? Or do you just sort of add to, you know, sort of sub-bench quality? But as I say, I'm pretty sure Cottrell's already looking at the next season. He picked this formation and this style to get out of League One. I guess there's a question mark as to whether it will work in the Championship, and he must have a view on that. But yeah, if he does, then he'll be looking for players who can fit neatly into the style. And I think if you look at a couple of loan signings he's made this year, they've done that as well. You know,
Matt Smith.
Matt Smith came in on loan and scored a bucket load of goals in 3 months and has helped us get to Wembley and some way toward promotion.
In terms of strengthening, though, it's you're at an interesting point, because you've kind of come full circle. You're about to go back into the Championship, but one of the reasons that you fell down to League One is because of the, you know, you went for broke, as it were. The wage bill was very high when you were chasing promotion under Gary Johnson. You came so close, but you didn't get there and crucially fell back. You don't want to find yourself in the same position again. I think you've had, I was just reading your accounts that have been released recently. The wage bill has been reduced by £5.5 million over the last few years, which is, you know, a big amount of money. So you don't want to go up and have to sign loads of players and give them, you know, in inverted commas, Championship level wages, you know, and then find yourself in the same position again. You've got to do it intelligently, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you look back to the year we got promoted to the Championship, well, 6-7 years ago now, that first season, I'm pretty sure our wage bill wasn't that big. I think what happened was we surpassed all expectations. We rolled on from promotion and got to the playoff final. And I think getting so tantalisingly close, you know, pretty much whetted everyone's appetite and raised expectations too high. And I'm, you know, I'm coming to the owner, Steve Lansdowne, and that as much as the fans. I think the prospect of a Premier League was suddenly far closer on the horizon than anyone had ever imagined, and we made some bad decisions in the types of players we signed and felt that now that was the time to go out and sign some big name players and some big wages. And it, you know, as you say, over 3 or 4 years that slowly unraveled and didn't work. I think they'd be happy to have some quality and some big wages, but what I don't think we're going to do is have a squad of 30 odd players again. I think, you know, we've learned lessons from that. We don't also want to keep bringing players in to replace what we've got. It's worked this year. We've got really, it's a fantastic team spirit. I can't overestimate the over importance of that this season. And I think, yeah, you can't have too many players to that sort of group without affecting that. And I think Kotz will be acutely aware of that and know the sorts of people, the sorts of character he wants to bring in, as well as the sort of style of player.
Just looking at the remaining fixtures, you've still got quite a couple of big games left. You've got Swindon at home and Preston away to come in April. Would you like to get promoted at home or away? Have you got a preference?
Yeah, I mean, we always looked at April. I must admit, it looked at it as a tough month before. It was going to be tough. And you got, you know, Bradford and Chesterfield away are certainly not going to be any pushovers in the month either. I think there was a moment in our season where we'd gone unbeaten all year, and Swindon actually ended that run in the middle of November. And our skipper, Wade Elliott, was sent off after 2 minutes. There was a lot of recrimination to the local derby, and you can imagine the atmosphere was quite heightened. And I think their players pretty much celebrated as if they won the league that day for beating us. And I think there's an awful lot of people who quite fancy
revenge,
return the favour on Easter Tuesday live on Sky and getting promotion against our, you know, our local rivals and winning it then. But Preston the Saturday after, obviously our closest rivals at the moment, and equally as important a game, because one thing is for certain of this team, they don't want to finish second. There's no question that anyone wants just in the second. Everyone wants to win the league, and that's been Cottrell's aim publicly right from day one of the season. And you know, I think that's what we want to achieve this season. I want to go and get that second trophy.
One of the most amazing things about the victory, about the game on Sunday in the JPT final, was the attendance. 72,315 fans in Wembley Stadium.
Biggest attendance for any game in England over the weekend.
Which is incredible. I think more than the last England game that was there. And you know, the vast majority of which were Bristol City fans. I think 40-odd thousand of you were there. And I think that just goes to show, really, the potential that's there for Bristol City. It's got to be one of the biggest cities around that hasn't had a top flight club for a long time. I mean, and if you get it right and you can continue this momentum and, you know, be a strong club in the Championship for the next few seasons and maybe bridge that gap and get into the Premier League.
Look at Wolves and Brentford.
Yeah.
Went up last season from League One.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, you could be a force, really, in English football if you manage to get it right.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you look at what Steve Lansdowne's done for the club over the last 10 years or so, and that has been his aim. He's no fool. He's made his money in hard business and on the stock exchange by, you know, being successful. And as much as he's a fan, you know, he's absolutely had his eye on investing and becoming that. I think we are the biggest city not to have a club in the Premier League since it started. I think that's without doubt. It does feel a bit different. I may come to regret these words, but there's just a whole atmosphere around the club. Steve Lansdowne's recently also acquired Bristol Rugby, and they're now playing Ashton Gate. The ladies' team, actually, worth a shout out to them, playing in the Champions. They're actually the last British club in the Champions League because they played on
Saturday
in the first leg,
I think, actually.
And it's all under the Bristol Sport umbrella, which Lansdowne's invested a lot in. I think there's just a general feeling that he's gone out to Barcelona and seen their way they set up with their sporting empire out there, and not for a second saying we're going to be anything like that on the football field, but that's the model he's after. And there's no doubt that, you know, having a Premier League football team is absolutely at the heart of that ambition, and he will do what he feels necessary to try and get us there, and, you know, and potentially has the money to do something to make it happen.
Messi to Ashton Gate, maybe at the end of his Barca
career.
Well,
we never know.
just one final.
We've got Luke Freeman.
Very good. Just one final question, Paul. More of a general question, really, about the Johnston Paint Trophy, because it does get a bit of a bad sort of rep, and there's talk about,
not on this show, it doesn't.
Well, no, there's talk of
long time listeners will fondly remember the Alan Johnston Paint.
Yeah, there's
trophy.
Talk about B teams as well, Premier League B teams coming into the JPT in future seasons. Has it been a fantastically positive thing for the season in general?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we've been to the final 5 times now. It's, you know, we've won it 3 times. It's been really good to us, and each time we've had 30,000 to 40,000 fans sort of turn up and enjoy the occasion. I don't doubt for a second that the semi-final in particular, the double leg win over Gillingham, played a huge part in our run in that 2 or 3 month period after Christmas, where we had lots of away games and we won the vast majority of our away games, which is tough at any level. And I think, you know, that momentum and that enthusiasm that was generated from that and the prospect of going to Wembley undoubtedly helped this team feel they're on the verge of something special and, you know, the chance of winning the double. I think only Birmingham have done that before, a League One and JPT double. Undoubtedly
one.
Helped. And yeah, some teams take it a bit easy in the early round, and you can understand that, I guess, but certainly once you get to the, say, semi-final stage, everyone's realising, you know, what an opportunity that is for them. And to have Premier League B teams in the competition would be disastrous, in my view. It's about the lower league. It's not about those guys. You know, they got enough opportunity. And, you know, this is Walsall's chance to go to Wembley,
yeah,
for the first time. You
absolutely.
Know, it was our first chance 20-odd years ago to go. And that, yeah, we don't want that to lose that romance and the opportunity.
You're totally
for those
right.
guys.
Walsall, you know, Walsall, first time in their, what, 127-year history, is it? And those chances,
yeah,
will be significantly reduced if, you know, Manchester City,
yeah,
B and Manchester United,
yeah,
B and Chelsea B are there. And
don't get me started on B teams again.
Yeah, yeah. we've been through this, but no, I think you're right.
Paul, thanks so much for coming on. Great
no
to talk to
all.
You. Enjoy the rest of the season
sorry,
and
mate.
The promotion, even when it eventually comes. That is Paul Binning. He writes the Bristol City blog, the XL Robin, and you can read it right now at xlrobin.blogspot.com. That is where you need to go. Next, we're going to stay in League One. We're off to Meadow Lane.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Okay, so let me read a list to you, DC. Here are some names. Steve Cottrell, who, of course, we just mentioned a hell of a lot. Craig Short, Paul Ince, Martin Allen, Keith Curl, Chris Kawamia and Sean Derry. What is the pattern?
Notts County managers.
Notts County managers, all in the last five...
The former Notts County,
yeah,
managers.
Yeah, all in the last 5 years. They certainly get through them, don't they? And Sean Derry is gone after Saturday's 4-1 defeat at MK Dons, which leaves the Magpies on the brink of the League One relegation zone. In fact, they've only won 3 games in their last 24 matches back since November. And remember, Sean Derry, last season was a bit of a revelation when he came in. Managed to keep them up, but it hasn't continued in that vein. Let's find out more about his sacking right now with the deputy editor of Notts County's Black and White fanzine, who is Jacob Daniel. And we're pleased to say that Jacob joins us on the show right now. Jacob, thanks very much for speaking to us. What was your initial reaction then when you heard the news that Sean Derry had gone? Are you happy or disappointed?
Well, I think the main thing that I and everyone felt was sadness, because it's been a long time since there's been a manager at the club that everyone's wanted to do well quite as much as we have with Derry. But when you look back at, read out those stats, like 3 wins in 24 games and managing to break the all-time record for home defeats in the season by March.
Ouch.
It's you can see where the board's coming from. I think there's been more sadness than any kind of relief or anything, I think, has been the message.
I was really interested to look at Notts County this week, because as regular listeners will know, Notts County were one of the teams that I sort of tipped to watch at the start of the season. I thought with the recruitment and the what at the time looked like a positive appointment of Sean Derry, I had high hopes for you. And up until the end of October, I was probably the only team out of all of my predictions across the league that was seemingly giving me any credit and proving me right. Because you had that 9-game unbeaten run, 5 wins in a row, and it was looking great up near the playoffs. And then just since then, since the 1st of November, it's been disastrous. I mean, what's happened from that great start to now?
I think the word recruitment is what it all comes down to. I think that at this level, particularly, managers will always live and die by that, because I think they're not all that tactically aware or that subtle. So if you can get your signings right and put a small, well-knit squad together, generally you'll do well. So I think the first stat you have to look at to see where it went wrong is the fact we've used 42 different players this season. It started to spiral out of control when we started losing games. And what Derry couldn't do is keep faith in a player after they had 1 or 2 bad games. So it started to get ridiculous where players would sign, play 1 or 2 games and then be consigned to the reserves. Like, there's players we've got still on the books who we haven't seen since last year. We've had kind of myriad of short-term loanees, none of whom have been able to replicate the quite good loanees we had before Christmas, like Petrasso and Zeli Ismail, who were a huge part of what we were doing. And I also think that he's just signed when you sign the amount of older players that he has, it can't really be a surprise when they run out of steam towards the end of the season. That average age at full time on Saturday was over 30, which is absurd for any team, really.
What would have been a realistic ambition for Notts County at the start of this season, then, given what he managed to achieve towards the back end of last year, keeping you in the division when it looked extremely unlikely? What were expectations at the start of the season? And have the fans stayed on side, I suppose, during the last few months? Well, it's got really tricky. Has there been a bad atmosphere at Meadow Lane?
There's not been so much of a bad atmosphere as no atmosphere at all, which is part of the problem. The crowd for the home defeat to Rochdale a week ago was the lowest in 7 years, I think. And the actual position in the table isn't a huge surprise or even a problem. I think most people expected us to struggle. And I think most people would have said if we stayed in the league, that would have been a successful season. But even though it looked like Derry may still be able to deliver that, if you deliver that with the home record that we've got, then no one will come and watch and you will have no money to buy another team next season. If the home and away records were switched round, he'd probably still be in a job, but he never found the way to win at Meadow Lane.
Taking temporary charge of the club now is ex-Forest manager Paul Hart and academy coach Mick Housel. Hart leads the betting in terms of who would be the next permanent manager, but other names that the bookies are suggesting are Mark Yates, Stephen Presley, James Beattie gets a mention. I mean, there's been lots of sackings this season, so there's a lot of managers who are out of work. I mean, what route do you want the club to go down? Because as Mark mentioned at the start, you've seen a lot of names in charge at Meadow Lane recently, and from a variety of different approaches. You know, you've got people like Paul Ince, you know, who kind of still trying to prove themselves really as managers after a high profile playing career. Derry was like a very inexperienced manager. So where do you want them to go?
I think that's a huge problem for us, and that's been why so much focus in the kind of aftermath of Derry's sacking hasn't so much been on him as the approach of the board, because it's getting to the point now where we appoint a manager but they'll have a completely different philosophy to the last manager, so they sign a completely different team to suit their methods, and then when it doesn't work we seem to think the way forward is to go and appoint the polar opposite. But of course, they don't want to work with the squad they've been given then. So the thing we've got now is probably the squad Derry's built is so full of kind of experienced, I think would be the nice way to put it, players, that whoever's going to come in is going to look at it and think there's not a whole lot to build on. But that does give you the leeway to look for someone who's able to build a squad and has proven they can do that. But I think what most people want is someone who has a recent track record of doing that. And I think for all of the different approaches we've taken, the one thing they have in common is that none of them have got kind of recent proof that they're able to overachieve with a modest budget in League One or League Two. Which is why, for me, someone like Mark Yates, who in the end it didn't go great for him at Cheltenham, but for quite a while there, he was doing a solid job and put together a decent team that was better than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, I think a lot of Cheltenham fans would wish he was still there, really, to be honest.
Absolutely, the way they're going at the minute. You're playing Scunthorpe at the weekend. There's a situation here where your chief exec, Jim Rodwell, has just moved to Scunthorpe, and they're one of the sides around you, down at the bottom there. You're just outside the League One relegation zone on goal difference. I'm looking at the fixture list. You're playing 7 games in April, which is a hell of a lot to cram in, pretty much obviously the 2 Easter games, and it's pretty much Saturday, Tuesday for the whole month. And you've got a lot of games against teams around you. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing given the run you're on at the minute. Do you think you can survive?
Well, for us, it's a good thing. It's something that makes Derry sacking a little bit stranger, because for the whole season, we've consistently beaten the other teams in the relegation mix. Now, I don't think we've beaten a single team this season who are above us in the table at the time we played them. But even in the run of 3 wins in 24 games, those 3 wins are against Crewe, Colchester and Leyton Orient, 3 of the teams who happen to be below us. So I think a run of games against teams around us isn't a bad thing if the team stick with the same kind of thing that was happening under Derry. But at the same time, the timing of it's quite strange a few days before such a big game, because for me, I expected them to have someone lined up and it to have been done and dusted. But the fact that Hart and Housel have been put in temporary charge, it indicate that there's a little bit of uncertainty there, at least. So it does smack of a little bit of a panicky move, I think.
And just a final question about the state of the club since the kind of Sven-Göran Eriksson sort of Saul Campbell project. I mean, long term, what is the vision for Notts County Football Club? I imagine that's a question a lot of the fans have been asking in recent seasons. It hasn't been entirely successful since then. Where do you see Notts County in sort of, say, 5 years' time?
See, I wish I know, really, but that's the problem.
Where they're going to be in 5 months, really, yeah. 5 years.
And that's been the problem with our board at the minute, in that we're not badly run in the sense that, say, Blackpool are badly run, but the decision-making on the football side is getting slightly bizarre, and it's hard to know which direction they want to go in, really. Like, we've had a dabble with using younger players, but that lasted for about 3 months. And then we've had a dabble now with older players, but that's not gone very well. It does seem like it's the time now, whether we stay up or not, in the long term, really, that's not the issue. What they've got to do is put some kind of strategy in place for how they want to move forward. Perhaps more importantly, stick with that strategy for longer than 6 months and ride out the first rocky patch. Whether that involves, you know, you can sack your manager, but this time you've got to stick with a manager along the same lines.
I think it's a shame, really, just, you know, looking at the, you know, the succession of managers you've had and just like the complete lack of progress you've been making over the last sort of 4 years. Because Notts County, we've been talking about Bristol City earlier, and a completely different club to Bristol. We were talking about how much potential Bristol City has as a club, being from such a well-populated area. But, you know, Nottingham's a very proud footballing city. Obviously, you're in the shadow of Forest, but you've got a very proud history yourselves. You're one of the oldest clubs. You know, the ground's not bad for the level that you're at. And I think it's a good club, you know, a really nice, you know, traditional heritage club. And I just think it deserves better than from lurching from one manager and one philosophy to the next. It's a good job for a young manager, maybe, who could come in, bed in, and really build something.
Yeah, I'd go with that, I think. I think our crowds aren't great, really. Although we've not had much success lately. The one or two seasons where we did do okay, they weren't bad. So, but I suppose you can't bank on having a good season and set your budget like that. But what they've not done is, the problem's not setting a modest budget or not having the resources of other teams in the league. The problem's not going out and finding a manager who's proven that they can work under those constraints and put together a useful team on that. Like, people mention our budget quite a lot. I believe it's supposed to be the 18th highest in the league. But then you look at other teams, the likes of Walsall and Rochdale, who will have even smaller budgets. Then you look at the way they move forward with younger players, with smaller squads, with selling people on.
And perfect examples, aren't they? Those two clubs with Keith Hill, I know he's been and he's come back, but and Dean Smith, they've been there for many years. They understand the club. They've got a philosophy, young players, intelligent, you know, shrewd recruitment when they can, and it's paid dividends for the pair of them.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I feel for the board a little bit, because I'm fairly sure Terry didn't go into his job interview and say, yeah, the plan's to have kind of a 37-year-old here, a 35-year-old here, and lose every home game. But at the same time, you've got to be a little bit more analytical about it and be a little more thoughtful and kind of look at the evidence you've got and say, look, this person's proven they can do that. They've proven it here. Let's give them a chance to do it here. I think we've got to get away from thinking that we can change the history of someone's managerial career, or indeed take a complete punt on someone who's not got that evidence that they can do it either way yet.
Well, five of the remaining nine games are at Meadow Lane, so you need to get that place rocking if you can for the Scunthorpe game starting on Saturday. Jacob, thanks very much for coming on the show and talking to us.
Cheers,
best of luck for the rest of the season. You might need it by the sounds of it. We'll be keeping an eye on it, seeing how it goes. That is Jacob Daniel, who's the deputy editor of Notts County's Black and White fanzine, and you can read more from the Black and White fanzine at thenottsblog.co.uk. Right, more in a second. Goes by, may the good times ever last.
to do something great together. Join Men United and help beat prostate cancer. Search Men United now.
So that was a little message for Prostate Cancer UK. And as we record this very show, the Prostate Cancer UK Stadium is Kenilworth Road. Special event Tuesday night, the 24th of March, obviously after you... before you hear this, but they're playing Wickham in a live game on the TV on Sky in League 2. Mm. And it's all been renamed for the night, which is fantastic.
Tremendous.
Tremendous bit of work.
Big fans,
by
of course.
Everyone
of,
down there at Prostate Cancer UK,
aren't we?
You can see our special. I'll listen back to our special on the website.
You're a big fan of Luton, though, aren't you?
I am.
For the purposes of this game.
Huge fan of Luton Town. The game's not finished as we record, so we won't give out the score yet. Actually, probably won't have finished by the time we finish this. But 3-2, well, we'll give out the score. 3-2 down as we record. What could really do with Luton winning that, because then Wickham would only be a point above us. 6 wins from 7, only a point below the top three now. It's back on. And I was saying to you, we're kind of inadvertently starting in League 2 here, but I was saying to you,
why don't we do that?
Okay, we'll start
Let's
in League 2
the other way.
Mixing it up, why not? When we were in the pub before this, just having a bit of food, I was telling you that when I was in Newcastle at the weekend, there was a big group of Bury fans that I was amongst, probably the highest proportion of Bury fans I've ever been in outside of an actual ground, and when that winning goal went in the 90th minute,
can't beat it.
You cannot beat it. Scenes that the people of Newcastle were utterly bemused by, let me tell you. So the top two still looking like they're going to go up. Burton Albion top, you've got Shrewsbury in second. Wickham, as things stand, are going to be 4 points clear in third. And we've got Southend on Saturday, which is a big old game in the playoffs. A couple of playoff spots still up for grabs at the minute. I suppose the big talking point, topic in League 2 is down at the bottom, though.
Oh, yeah.
We covered Hartlepool, obviously, on the show this season, but they looked completely cut adrift. You'll have seen the vine of Jeff Stelling interrupting the classified scores a couple of weeks ago when they scored a late goal. The win came in, and it looks like they could do it under Ronnie Moore.
Yeah, 3 wins on the bounce. And that gap has closed right up just to 1 point. Cheltenham on 37 points. Tranmere on 37 points just outside the relegation zone. York, who you beat last week.
Oh,
wobbling as well.
They just can't score,
not
York.
Out of it yet.
They just cannot score. Russ Wilcox, who obviously had a great season at Scunny last year, really struggling there. The fans were turning against him at Beef and Crescent last week. Tranmere, you mentioned they're just outside the goal, just outside the relegation place on goal difference. I think they've got one of the worst form runs, or one of the worst runs of any team in that division.
Lost,
not really,
what is it?
Not really worked under Mickey Adams for them so
far.
Lost
6 of their last 7 games.
Yeah, so it's looking pretty grim for them. And of course, who do they play last day of the season? They play us. That's just the way it's looking at the minute.
Prenton Park
at
or
Prenton
the,
Park, yes, that could be quite an atmosphere at Prenton Park. So that is that's our last game of the season. Obviously, quite a busy few weeks coming up. There might actually be some teams promoted by the time you get back from America. Mm. Looking at some of the leads, some of these teams have got into League One. It's tight down the bottom there as well. Yeovil, they're looking gone at the minute.
I
if we're honest,
Skiverton's pretty much admitted as much as well. Really,
they're on 33, so they're 9 points away from safety. Colchester, 4 points off safety. Orient still in the relegation zone, not been able to get out. They've got a game in hand though, and Crewe are level with Notts County.
Big loss for
Crawley.
Huge win for Crawley, but a terrible loss for Orient on Saturday.
Crawley, Coventry, Scunthorpe, even Walsall not completely safe yet. There's a whole bunch of teams around there. Tony Mowbray's at least made a bit of an impact. Coventry have climbed out of the relegation zone.
They nearly won 3 in a row, but they did lose to Doncaster at the weekend. But I mean, Crawley are the team there. I think no, 5 wins out of their last sort of 8 or 9 games have really picked up.
Since John Gregory sadly had to have his operation, didn't he? And Dean Saunders has come in. The one team you would sort of fear for looking there, though, it's Crewe with that dreadful goal difference, minus 33, which is considerably worse than any of the sides around them. In the top half, Barnsley under Lee Johnson on a fantastic run. I think that's 6 wins and 2 draws from their last 8 games in all competitions, which is some kind of record. Nice feature on them on the Football League show over the weekend. They're just outside the playoff places. Rochdale still...
I did like the woman on the Football League show.
Oh yeah.
It just summed up football fans perfectly.
She
said, well, you know, I thought we should have given Danny Wilson more time really.
Yeah, really.
I
liked him.
Didn't think it was the right decision, and we were really sad to see him go. But then Lee Johnson's come in and it's basically the right decision because he's won every game.
Yeah. See you, Danny. That was pretty much what she was saying. Rochdale are losing at Oldham at the minute, but they are just outside as well, as are Donny. But 6th spot. What an impact.
I mean, how many fans did we speak to at Peterborough that day? And not
Dave
one of
Robertson.
Them really thought they had any chance of going up. And, you know, they were all the talk was about Steve Evans, but it doesn't look like that would happen now. You know, it looks like Dave would get the job if you went by form. And the great turnaround he's managed to deliver in the short space of time he's been in charge. But as you say, it's very tight, but... Yeah, well, they've got just as much a chance as anyone around them.
There's actually a huge gap between fourth and fifth. So Sheffield United's still not completely safe. They're only 3 points above seventh. In fourth, MK Dons, big win at the weekend. Swindon in third, who didn't play. I don't think they play next week either because of the international. Their game's off because of international call-ups, which is basically Massimo Luongo, isn't it, pretty much, I think. And the top two looking good at the minute. Obviously, we cover Bristol City. How important is it for Simon Grayson to get Preston promoted this season, given how close they come and how often they screw it up in the playoffs?
Well, he should do, because they've got a great team for League One. Joe Garner, he's a player who...
Joint top scorer in the league now.
He's on fire, and he's a player I always watch of interest because he actually was at Watford for a little spell, and it just didn't ever go for him. He had injuries, he was in and out of the team, we had a few manager changes, and it just, you know, for one reason or another, he didn't perform while he was there with us, and we sent him out on loan and eventually went back to Preston, and that is a club that he's flourishing at, and obviously he's a very talented player, and that's why he's been bought by Championship clubs for reasonable sums of money in the past, and with a player like him spearheading the team that they've got, there's no excuse for them not to go up at this season. It's tight. Swindon are still there with them, play some very attractive football. And just given the psychological impact of them being, you know, of that playoff record on those players and on the whole club and of the fans, if they end up in the playoffs, you know, they'll be absolutely desperate to get up in second.
Down at the bottom of the Championship, well, I mean, if Blackpool are not relegated by the time you get back from America, then I don't quite know what's gone on, because they are, well, how many points can they have? 7 games left, so they're going to get 20, going to get to 44 the maximum. So basically, yeah, they're going to be gone in about 2 weeks, I think. Second bottom, Millwall, also a draw. Brentford, I think they were 2-0 up on
Saturday.
Yeah,
they were.
Massive drop, 2 points for Neil Harris's side there. They're 7 points off safety. Wigan, though, still in with a shout. They got a last-minute equaliser against Bolton on Saturday. Great goal as well. Overhead kick by...
Waghorn.
That's the one. By Martin Waghorn. And Rotherham chucked away 3 points in injury time.
Absolutely.
That could be potentially quite a big swing in the next
crucial.
Quite a big, a crucial moment in the next
Absolutely.
Few weeks, because Wigan have gained a point and Rotherham have dropped three.
Yeah.
So the gap between the two clubs is only 5, and there's raining goals in the last few minutes, wasn't it, at
Amazing.
The New York Stadium.
Well, and it was right into the 98th minute as well. The game was late kicking off, and then there was delays during the game, so we had 8 plus minutes of injury time. Rotherham, when Wednesday initially pulled one back, Rotherham took the lead again through Bowery, you know, 2-1 up then going into injury time. You'd think getting straight back, you know, you'd think conceding the equaliser, oh God, they'd be deflated, but getting straight back and thinking, right, now we hold on to that.
Yeah.
You know, we've got it, we've got our noses back in front immediately. To lose 3-2, you know, it's inexcusable. At
Criminal.
Home, you know, against your one of your local rivals as well. They might potentially look back at this defeat if they do go down and Wigan do manage to claw them back and say this is, you know, a real key moment for them. But interesting, watch your Sheffield Wednesday, who are having, you know, a good season by their standards. I had them to go down at the start of the season. You know, they're 12th at the moment. But Lewis McGugan seems to be involved in a lot of everything that they do that's good at the moment. And it's interesting because he is a player that no one at Watford was really sad to see loaned out this season. He did contribute quite a lot for us last season. And, you know, we all know him as a player that scores great goals and has definitely got quality, real good quality at the Championship level. And he's kind of highly regarded by everyone who has never had him in their team. When you have him in your team, you know, no, Forest fans weren't that sad to see him go. He was a homegrown talent, but by the time he'd left, nobody was that fussed. When he came to Watford, we were all happy. He did okay. But then when he left, we weren't that fussed. And he's doing really well now at Sheffield Wednesday. If he signs for them in the summer, I'll be very intrigued to see whether in another year or 18 months' time, as he faded there. It's interesting to see the pattern.
Sheffield Wednesday up in 12th at the minute. Just one more team to mention down the bottom. Fulham, who won 2-0 at Huddersfield. Naki Wells missing 2 penalties in the same game, which is quite rare. Reading just above Fulham, and of course, since the last show, they've beaten Bradford, and they'll be going to Wembley to play Arsenal in the FA Cup semi-final. So best of luck to them in that. Let's look at...
Just on Fulham there for a second. I mean, what a ridiculous... pair of games they've had. the game where they lost 3-0 at home to Leeds,
yeah.
They had what, like some ludicrous amount of shots on goal, hit the bar and the, you know, hit the woodwork a number of times. They battered Leeds. Leeds had about 5 shots, 3 of them went in.
Lost 3-0.
Yeah. They lose 3-0. And then they go
away
to Huddersfield. They you know,
get
two
battered.
Penalties. They get absolutely hammered by Huddersfield. Exactly the reverse of the previous game. Naki Wells misses 2 penalties. They get the second goal, or, you know, a breakaway goal in the last minute, which they pretty much missed, but, you know, happens to fall back straight back into the striker's path so he can get the rebound in. I mean, it's crazy.
Right, top of the Championship. Oh, he's just set up in his seat. He means business here. Let's have a look at how things stand then. There's been 3 lots of games, amazingly, since we did the last show, which just seems ridiculous, really. But 3 lots of games. Let me give
that
you
long
a,
ago,
let,
was,
let, it's about, was it about a week and a half, 2 yeah. weeks ago? Let me give you a little mini table of what, mini breakdown of what's happened in the last 3 games. Bournemouth, 2 wins and a draw. Watford, 2 wins and a defeat. Middlesbrough, 2 wins and a defeat. Norwich, 1 win and 2 draws. Derby, 1 draw and 2 defeats. Ipswich, 2 wins and a defeat. Brentford, 1 win, 1 draw, 1 defeat. Wolves, 2 wins and 1 draw. So out of all that, the team that stands out at Derby, because they haven't won a single game, and that's 6 without a win now.
Yeah.
And they're letting a ludicrous own goal at Wolves on Friday as well. Lee
yeah,
Grant.
They did, although there was the incident with the Tom Ince and potentially getting a player sent off.
Yes.
The referee played advantage. They could have...
England's Tom Ince.
They could have gone through and scored the goal and been 1-0 up. McLaren was very unhappy and thought he deserved
angriest
more.
Angriest I've seen him on the touchline, yeah. Actually. Thought he was going to get sent off there.
Yeah, well, clearly the pressure's showing because they...
Favourites for the league.
They have gone from being favourites for automatic promotion right up there, you know, looking like the signing of Darren Bent was a masterstroke with Tom Ince, to really struggling for form now. You know, the injuries to Chris Martin and to Darren Bent haven't helped. The injuries in the defence haven't helped. The injuries in midfield haven't helped. The injuries are a problem. But I was speaking to Jonathan Rodgers, who we had on a while back, about...
You could say Brendan Rodgers for a second.
No. The sort of the Derby fan, but the one who also watches Watford, if you'll remember. And he was saying that, you know, there are deeper problems than just the injuries in terms of the defensive lineup isn't necessarily the best, don't have the best balance in the defence, could have strengthened the defence more in the summer, and, you know, consistently leaking goals is what's done for them, really. And now, and especially now, they can't score any because a lot of their forward players are injured, so they need to do something to turn it round. Because imagine if they finished 7th, it'd be disastrous.
Yeah,
they could easily do it at this stage.
Two brilliant goals I wanted to mention from those games at the top. Cameron Jerome, right, in the Premier League,
yeah,
bang average, absolutely useless. In the Championship, tearing it up.
Yeah.
Now, is that just something that, you know, we need to accept, perhaps? There's a bit of a difference? I don't know.
Cause it's confidence, isn't it? A lot of it, I think, has to be confidence. He's playing in a team.
If you didn't see this goal, it's like a back-heel sort of flick against Forest on Saturday at
really
Carrow Road.
You know, and it's a sort of thing that only a confident player would do if that was in one of his spells for Stoke or whoever.
Palace,
and it wasn't going well for him, he'd probably try and take a touch or lay it off, and, you know, it's a different thing.
And the other one I was going to mention was Harry Arter for Bournemouth, coming onto that on his left foot against Middlesbrough.
He's a good player.
He's an excellent player.
I remember seeing Bournemouth play, was it Stevenage? I think I saw them play Stevenage in League One a few years ago. And Arter on the day was one of the players that stood out for me then. And he's consistently been, you know, at the heart of this Bournemouth team as part of their rise over the last few years. He's now got recognised his first call up to the full Ireland squad. I think he's an excellent player, and that was a great goal.
In our big sort of look at the top of the table in the previous sort of full episode before your Millwall one, you sort of said you didn't think Ipswich played the best football of the teams up there, and you mentioned a couple of squad players, you know, the likes of Richard Chaplow,
Freddie Sears,
and they combined for the winning goal in injury time to beat Watford on Saturday. Some kind of justice, everyone, don't you think?
Karma.
Watford 0, Ipswich 1, meaning, well, you're still in the top two.
You were
top of the table before that. Obviously got an international break coming up this weekend. Bournemouth and Watford at the top. I mean, it's just, well, I mean, we could waste another 10 minutes talking about it, but
it's
so tight.
Watching the highlights back, and I was at work on Saturday, and there was an Ipswich fan in the office with me, and we had the commentary, we had the goals as they go in on, and as they threw, as Adrian Durham threw to a goal, there's been a late goal at Vicarage Road, we both just looked at each other, and it seemed like that moment, and it could only have been a second or two, lasted an eternity, just waiting for that reporter to say,
Watford
Nil. And my heart sank. My head hit the keyboard. He was up and down, dancing and jumping around the office.
Top over his head.
And it was a terrible moment because, of course, I'd say now a point would have been a good result having lost the game. But watching the highlights, it's just one of those games where you just... It's decision-making. Decision-making is so important. You know, there was a moment where Gediora ran clean through and he chose to shoot and he could have squared it to Deeney, who was in acres of space. Bad decision-making. And Ben Watson, you know, a lesser player than Ben Watson, one of Ipswich's big, ugly defenders, probably would have, if it was the roles were reversed, would have cleared that big, long clearance out when he was the last man out for a throw-in and you get a point. But Watson is a good player. He wants to bring it down and try and attack and try and get the win for Watford. Tries to bring it down, loses the ball, Sears robs him of it, squares it to Chaplow, 1-0, they've got the point, they've gone mad. And it's just those tiny moments. And it's, you know, it's easy to look at them and focus on these little moments. Obviously, the whole season thing...
What's going on here?
It's your phone.
It's your phone.
Oh.
It's your dad. He's probably ringing to give you an update on the Watford Leeds
game.
Well,
it's a good job he's rung because I would have gone on forever. But basically, like, it's those little moments that can be the difference between us finishing second and third or between us going up and not. You know, Ipswich now, all of a sudden, they'll be thinking they might have a chance of automatic promotion once more. So, I mean, it was a bitterly disappointing defeat for us, but at least we got the international break now where we can regroup. And the bad news for Watford in terms of the team from Saturday was Joel Ekstrand, who went down injured.
Horrible.
It looked horrible, and he's going to be out for 9 months now.
Ouch. Will your dad do what my dad does and then leave you a voicemail saying, can you call me?
Probably,
just
cost
me 25p to listen to that, Dad. Right, so we'll leave the Championship there. Now, something we want to talk about before the end of the show is young players in the Football League.
Absolutely.
So... talk to me about this. We've had a couple of conversations about this, and we want to do something on this before the end of the season.
Well, we basically want to try and find the best young players in the Football League, and that's not necessarily putting them in any order. We're not necessarily doing like a 4-4-2 style best 100 players outside the Premier League, because that always brings about, you know, arguments and discussions. What we want to do is basically find out, in the opinion of the fans of each club, who's the best, most promising young player at each of the 72 clubs in the Football League.
Criteria? So, age-wise? Or
I would say you've got to be eligible for your nation's under-21 side. So that's 20. That's 21 or under at the start of the campaign, which with the Euros at the moment, isn't it? So anyone that could play for their nation's under-21s is a young player for me.
Okay. So we would like to hear from fans. Is that the way we're going to do this, or...?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. That's the best way. We want to hear from the guys that watch these players week in, week out. So the players, players that have played for the first team as well. Obviously, you know, there'll be some of you, many of you perhaps, who will be keeping tabs on your youth players and the academy prospects. But players that have played for the first team who are under 21.
Now, I would like to think that we would have at least one fan of every single Football League club.
I think so.
That listens to this show. Maybe not Accrington, but you never know. So we'd love you to get in touch.
And that's no disservice to Accrington, but they are historically the team we've had the most trouble getting people on for.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there's a few ways you can do this. We're looking at compiling we're going to do a special show on it before the end of the season.
And then basically we're going
to... So you don't have to just sort of send it in a tweet. You can send us an email if you want to tell us some more information about the player. I think we're going to try and get a few people on, aren't we,
we're going to try and talk to some of them, you know, to interview some of these young
players. Some of the players, of course,
Maybe speak to some coaches, some of the managers, find out a bit more about these players. Because we'll all know some of the more high-profile players at the top end of the Championship. But, you know, there's... a hell of a lot of young talent coming through it, you know, clubs up and down the country, many of which we won't necessarily hear about.
Does this player have to
shine a light on them?
Does this player have to have come through the youth system at your club? Or
not necessarily, no.
Okay, there you go. You've heard the rules, folks. So we'd like you to email us. If you go to wearegoingup.co.uk and click on contact, you fill in the form there, or you can just whack it to our Gmail if you want, wagyupodcast@gmail.com. The Twitter at wagyupodcast, just send us in a tweet. Obviously, you know, it'd be pretty obvious who your team is, but you can just stick that in there just so we don't mess it up, which we might do. So that's the ways to get in touch, and the Facebook page, you can post them on there as well. Right, that is it, I think, pretty much for this week's show. If you'd like to take advantage of our free audiobook offer courtesy of the lovely, nice people at Audible, that is audible.co.uk/goingup. And if you'd like to get a 20 quid free bet if you bet a fiver, sign up for a new Paddy Power account at wearegoingup.co.uk via the link there, and for the football pools as well. Win yourself some cash. That you can then go and blow in America watching WrestleMania and Las Vegas. So you're back in the middle of April in a few weeks' time. So, fingers crossed. fingers crossed. So we'll see how the season stands at that point. There will be a show before then, I'm sure of it. We'll
try
and do a couple of mini episodes, maybe, or a full show, depending on
if
who's knocking
me, mate,
around.
You know where I am.
What's the time difference?
Give me a call.
What are we looking at?
Anytime, day or night, I will be there.
What is it? It's quite a big time difference.
It's about 9 hours behind, I think. Yeah.
Okay, well, that might be doable.
Might work.
If we record at this time, nah, you're looking at lunchtime, you won't be up by then, will you? That's the way it's going to go. Right.
Are you going to have this podcast ready and edited for me to listen to on the plane?
What time's your plane at?
So we record Tuesday night. I'm flying midday Wednesday.
Yes, well, once I get home.
That's your challenge.
Okay, that'll be fine. Just make sure you refresh your Pocket Cast just when you're sat on the tarmac at Heathrow. Right, that's it. Thanks for listening, everyone. Enjoy the international break this weekend if you can. I know it's quite tough.
Easter, I suppose.
Yeah, there's always football going on. Well, I'll be here before Easter. There's always football going on in League One and League Two, though. Big weekend of fixtures coming up, and Wickham still winning with a couple of minutes to go, which is annoying me. That's it. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the States. That's your dad again. And that's it for this week's We Are Going Up.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The Football League covered.